Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 11th of June. Very nice to have you with us for this Monday morning. I hope you had a lovely weekend. It seemed that most people had a lovely weekend simply because it was the first time in, I believe, 7 or 8 months where the weather was nice. Mm-hmm. So it was that's great. Very, very nice. And we welcome you to the program and hope that the sun keeps shining as we talk to you for the next couple of hours. Good morning. Let me introduce the panel to you. Libby Post is here. She is a political consultant. She is our Monday regular. She is she is wearing her pride beads.
That's right.
She came from Albany Pride yesterday, had a very successful event, and we welcome you and happy Pride. And
happy Pride to everybody, and a happy anniversary to the love of my life. 23 years today.
23
to
years
Lynn
today.
Yep.
And oh my God.
I know now she's at the house like going, I can't believe you said that. But nonetheless, I love you and we need to celebrate.
I think Lynn has a very similar reaction to that than Kelly does.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But oh well. We're here, they're not. What are you going to do?
Awesome.
Yeah. Barry Lewis is with us. He is the executive editor of the Times-Herald Record in Middletown. And Barry, good morning. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Not only do we love you for coming up the thruway for such a long distance, not only do we love you because of your incredible insight and grasp of the issues, but we love you because you brought Rugula.
Oh, and this is the staple of the Catskills. There's nothing better in the summertime than folks from Brooklyn coming up to the Catskills to bake Rugula for everybody else.
It's the motherland.
It's the migration.
It really
the
is.
Rugula migration.
Yes.
Right.
Well, very nice to have you with us as always.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled to have you here. David Soares was with us Friday. We had so much fun. We said, hey, you want to just stay here forever? And he said, sure, I'll come be back.
Slept
Monday.
Over.
Yeah.
And discovering that apparently you need to be here on Mondays because you have great baked goods on Mondays as opposed
Fridays
to Wednesdays and
like
Fridays.
Yeah.
Monday is baked good day.
Right.
Yeah. We thought we'd keep that a secret from you. But David Soares is the Albany County District Attorney and our dear friend, and we're very happy to have him here. Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey.
Good to have you aboard. Have a good weekend. Everything nice? Everything fine? Okay.
Oh, good. Monosyllabic this morning.
I was out in the garden. The pollen is so bad now.
Yeah, the pollen is something.
But to say that I ended up as a mass of snot is probably true.
Well, you had a little bit of green tinge on you from all the pollen, just like the cars.
I was hoping it was just the pollen that was the green tinge.
Yeah, okay. Me too. But, you know.
So while you were sleeping over the weekend, we are now negotiating with North Korea. We are trying to get Russia back into the G8, and we're at war with Canada.
It's great.
All in a weekend's work.
Who knew that was possible?
Easier than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Man. So
I think Jeb Bush said that he was the chaos candidate, but he's turned out to be quite the chaos president.
Yes.
It's well, we don't know exactly. Well, I guess we do know what happened. It's just trying to figure out exactly.
And
how it happened, but
nobody's quite sure.
And Joan, we're not only upset with Canada, but we are personally insulting Justin Trudeau. He has replaced Kim Jong-un as one of the great dictators of the world.
It's pretty incredible. President Trump escalated a bitter clash with some of America's closest allies on Sunday, lashing out through his advisors as Canada's prime minister in unusually personal terms and leaving himself with a diplomatic crisis as he arrived in Asia to negotiate a nuclear agreement with North Korea. If you want to show off your prowess as a great negotiator, you go piss off Canada.
you take on Canada, but I have an entirely different theory. I just think that someone should have handed him a Snicker bar when he got back on Air Force One.
Just kind of calm down the blood sugar and okay.
I think that's a good idea.
A day after Mr. Trump refused to sign a communique of the Group of Seven major industrial economies, he and his advisors went on the attack, accusing Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of betrayal and a stab in the back, even as Canada, Germany, and France pushed back against what they called the American president's insult and inconsistency. The exchange left Mr. Trump estranged from America's partners at the very moment he's about to stride onto the most important world stage he has assumed since taking office. Aides attributed his outburst over the weekend to his feelings undercut as he prepared to meet with the Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, while critics said he had stiff-armed his friends at the expense of a unified front.
We call these the European countries, but really what they are the existing democracies in the world. And that while there is a temptation for all of us to get great mirth out of this, there ain't nothing funny about it. This is a terrible, terrible moment in American history. And the more I look at it, the more I see it started with Russia. He said in the beginning Russia was great. Putin was his friend from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that he could work with Putin. Of course, all these allegations. His own attorney general had to recuse himself from being a little too familiar with the Russians. And now he is saying almost inexplicably all of this to the G7 people. We have to let Putin, who did two awful things in the Crimea and Ukraine, back in unpunished. And because it would be good for the, quote, good for the world. This is very bad stuff. I'm working on a novel.
Even if there was a philosophical difference, a policy difference, to take an ally, a friend, refer to them, mm-hmm. to their face, as, well, to
Twitter.
As dishonest and weak and meek and mild, which Trudeau seemed to be anything but, mm-hmm. in his defiance of what had taken place on Friday and Saturday, you do have to wonder where we're headed when it comes to ultimately trade and tariffs and with Canada and the rest of Europe.
Well, what's interesting here as well is the fact that if we look back and reflect on how all of this started, he directed his trade ambitions against China, who he had just really, lambasted for their deflation of their dollar, as well as the espionage, the corporate espionage. So he directed, when this all started, he was directing his anger towards China. And so he set about to impose steel and aluminum taxes until someone actually, touched him on the shoulder and said, well, this isn't going to hurt China as much as it's going to hurt Canada and some of our other allies. And then 2 weeks later, he's sending out tweets about helping, people in China get their jobs back, mm-hmm. by helping to promote this corporation that is a known, a trademark, copyright, technological, thief throughout the world. So his outrage in his battle with Canada, and as well as our G7 allies, originally started with his desire to really show the Chinese, right? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
One of the ironies is he could have gone into the summit with a show of strength, unified force with the G7, comes in there, and with that behind him, then sits down with Un. Instead, in his mind, his show of force is that, look what I did to my allies. Be careful when you talk to me.
Right.
So somehow in his mind, this is the best strategy, is to show I can do this to my friends. Now let's talk.
Or is it worse than that? Meaning I'm not on their side, I'm on your side.
And we truly don't know. We don't know the mindset as to, in his, as he's doing his, art of the deal, why he would take these things. And the other part of this is he's the great bully, because he does not ever say or insult or do anything to anybody's face. He doesn't have mm-hmm. the courage to have told Trudeau, I've got some issues here. He gets on the plane and he's tweeting outrageous stuff. And where maybe an hour before he says, we have a 10 in terms of our working relationship with all of them, with everybody in the G7, Merkel and France and And so you're coming away from there confused.
Well, you know, a picture says a thousand words, yeah. right? And that picture of him sitting in the chair, arms across with a pout, you know, the funja, as we would say.
Merkel leaning
right?
over
and
the table.
And Merkel leaning over the table.
Glowering.
It was unbelievable.
And he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be there.
But that says it all from my perspective. He's a baby. He's a bully. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's, you know, all over the place. Some people think he's a brilliant strategist because he's keeping everybody off balance all the time. But I think, yes, there's probably something like that going on, but he's putting us in abject danger. And he is, you know, our allies, the people that we have always relied on since World War II to protect democracy around the world, are now saying, America, you're a laughingstock because of who you've elected. And Der Spiegel, the German paper, called him immoral over the weekend.
Oh, well, you know, to your point, you know, last Wednesday was the day that we recognized the sacrifices that were made
right.
by the Allies, right, and freeing the world
right.
from the greatest tyrant. And so what does the new greatest tyrant in the world do when he's going to meet
That's
with our
right.
allies?
Right.
He engages in that behavior. But if you follow the news conference before he left the United States late, by the way, for that meeting, I mean, that was the tone. That was the tone that he was going to set. And we shouldn't have really been too surprised. I think for this coming week, what I'm on pins and needles about is what is going to be the outcome here of this discussion today, or tomorrow, actually, with North Korea? And more importantly, how is that going to influence what China does in the Southeastern Seas where they're militarizing, mm-hmm. right? Is that going to, you know, increase? And quite honestly, what are you thinking if you're South Korea? And what are you thinking if you're Japan?
And China. Right. China, the one of the articles we read, you know, the sort of like now the odd man out in all of this, and that remains to be seen.
Never going to be the odd man
right. out. Right, but that remains, but they are feeling a little like they're not part of it. But the thing about, you know, you said about Memorial Day and, you know, honoring our veterans. When he spoke on Memorial Day, it was all about him.
Oh.
That's the issue. It everything has to be about him. So when he's at the G7, it can't be all about him. So he sits there like a baby. And Korea, it's just going to be him and the North Korean president for the most part.
And
it will be about him.
And he doesn't have to get anything out of this. I don't think he's got a deep concept of what this is going to mean in terms of unilateral force and, you know, 20 years down the road. He sees this as, I've been able to meet with
That's
North
right.
Korea that no other president has done. I told you I would do this. I'm the great man. I'll take my Nobel Prize now. I've done, regardless of what happens or what doesn't happen, he can say, I've done what no president can do.
It's conflation. It's absolute conflation.
And that is enough for him.
It is about promoting himself. I mean, if you think back, the last thing that the former president had stated to him about his challenges, he said that President Obama told him in the White House that North Korea is going to be the biggest problem that you have. And so what does the president who's done nothing but destroy the legacy of the former president, what is he going mm-hmm. to do? He is going to take this meeting, which, by the way, is usually the culmination of what, you know, diplomats do. You know, it's a year away before, or 2 years away, this meeting with the president to give North Korea the kind of standing that photo is going to deliver all across, you know, the globe is the culmination. What does he do? That's where he's
now,
going
David,
to start.
David, I want to point one thing out to you. Far be it from me to enjoy saying this, but his numbers are going up. His numbers are going up. So on some level, he knows what he's doing. He doesn't care about the legacy. He doesn't care about the long-term effect. He just wants those numbers to go up. And as you said before, Barry, give me my Nobel Prize, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. Into all of this comes China. I read an interesting article over the weekend in the Times, and I think they may have gotten it wrong. They decided that China may be a little PO'd about this thing happening. I don't think so. I think China is the puppet master here.
They orchestrated this.
Yes, absolutely right. The Times, of course, went out and got a couple of political type pundits from various universities to say, yes, that's right.
Well, then that plays right into China's hand if that's the case.
Yeah, the nations that love this most besides North Korea, obviously, because already just having be able to embrace, and he'll embrace Trump, that alone puts them at a level that he's wanted to be at, that he promised his father and his grandfather. But this is what China and this is what Russia have wanted. I mean, Putin is looking at this going, you know, Trump is pushing me in. These are the countries that are benefiting from what's going to be taking place in the next 48 hours.
It doesn't matter what North Korea says. It just
doesn't have to say anything.
It doesn't matter, because there is no way that China will ever accept American troops or even South Korea. There's no way that a greater presence of American influence will ever be accepted.
Well, take it the other way.
Upon the Chinese border.
David, the other way, of course, is that part of this negotiated deal well may be getting rid of the existent 100,000-plus troops that are in South Korea. And that may be what they hope, what the North Koreans hope to achieve, and the Chinese may hope that with them.
Absolutely, because then, you know, as we sit here and speak, the only thing that the Chinese have to fear in terms of their investment in the Southeast China Sea is the presence of U.S. forces on the Korean Peninsula.
Yep.
And if that's negotiated away, and it very well may be negotiated away, because this president and the opportunity for him to you know, have a photo taken and be on the cover of Time magazine, mm-hmm. for having achieved some faux accomplishment in the Korean Peninsula, he will negotiate that away.
But here's what. Trump thinks that no matter what happens, if you have power, if you have an army, if you have a navy, that you just send them in. We already know that about the South China Sea. He's already done that. And so let's say he makes the deal and they do something with those islands or those self-constructed islands out there and start to beat their chests. He'll send in an aircraft carrier or two. You know he will.
And the foundation for this also is, let's not forget, this is North Korea. This isn't a country that is going to possibly abide by whatever rules, right, whatever they agree, right, to. You know, there's nothing on paper, there's nothing historically that says, well, they've agreed to this, so we're all going to go away.
Quite the contrary, right.
Yeah, which is all kind of in the background there, regardless of what is agreed to.
Let's talk more about this and also talk about the meeting that will take place tomorrow, although our time, it is later today, 9 p.m. tonight. So we will talk about that when we come back. And we welcome your letters as always. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Hello, how are you?
We came for a visit this morning.
Talking to Siri, we're having a conversation. None of the panelists would talk to me during the break, so Siri and I are chatting. I do hope you'll leave us alone. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Thank you very much. Good to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, David Soares, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. We also have a lot of letters regarding what we've talked about thus far, and we go to Alan for those.
You know, I love our panel, but I love the idea that Barry comes up and our Middletown constituency is with us. That's really fabulous. So thanks for bringing that to us.
Thank you for the invite.
Okay.
It's great to be here.
And Kevin, our good friend, says, don't forget, Dennis Rodman was there first. and Richard says, Giuliani's remarks about Kim. I wish President Trump well on his trip to Singapore to meet with Kim Jong-un. I hope that Mr. Kim did not notice that Donald Trump's head attorney, Rudolph Giuliani, speaking from Jerusalem 4 days ago, praised Trump for forcing Kim, quote, back on his hands and knees.
Yeah, right.
To, quote, right, beg for the meeting. How does such a statement by Giuliani help the prospect of a successful meeting with Kim? What is the strategy of making such a statement? Well, we all know what the strategy is.
And by the way, is Giuliani the personal lawyer for Donald Trump, or is he our new Secretary of State?
Well, that's a very good question. And this, and when he goes off the reservation, well, that's a bad term, and I apologize for it. But when he,
goes off the third rail.
Yeah, goes off the touches the third rail. He thinks he's helping him, because it really is all about his electoral prospects. And that's the way you do that. Okay, so thanks for that. Howard says, understanding Trump's motives. The simplest explanation is usually correct. Trump needs to assist and placate Putin in undermining the Western alliance because he's dependent on funds from Russian oligarchs. He gets money from them by laundering it on their behalf. If Mueller's investigation proceeds unimpeded, this will all come out. Now, Howard, who wrote us this letter, you said it. We didn't. So send a lawyer. We have David Soar sitting here. He'll help us out. But anyway, I agree with you, Howard, in the larger sense that he is in bed with these guys. And that's the only explanation I can have.
I'm so shocked that Friday's remarks about the G7 readmitting, Putin and Russia back into that very prestigious, honorable, democratic organization. Mm. I'm shocked that was out of the 24-hour news cycle. It disappeared into the ether. That is the most profound remarks this person made this week.
Yeah.
Whether on Twitter or otherwise.
You think somebody in Mueller's office might be scribbling down?
If you are, his personal counsel, what do you do? What do you do? It's just one more thing that you've got a number of assistants and clerks scribbling around trying to figure out, how do we defend this?
Mm-hmm. Well, the story in the New York Times regarding John Kelly this morning.
Say, because I didn't see that.
He was quoted over the weekend apparently of telling a group that it was a miserable, miserable job and just how he has been sidelined.
I was wondering about that because he's nowhere to be found in any of these stories.
Go with the president to North Korea, he is not has been very much sidelined, and apparently that the
Joe, are you saying that he's being treated like a second-class citizen?
Yeah, but he's also
Are you
also
saying that they
being...
built a wall? are you saying that that's what's happening to our friend John?
That's what I'm saying.
The longer these people stay in there, they become complicit, and at some point, they don't need the job.
Right.
Unless you're not running for office. Right. And I don't know what the job is, but unless you're not running for re-election, those are the only people who dare speak up.
But they're not doing that. And they do have futures, and they think they have futures.
John Kelly needs this job?
Well, apparently. It's a very powerful position. And, these guys always have one eye open for what's coming next in their lives, and they don't want to screw it up.
But the closer and the longer you're in the Trump sphere, the more tarnished you become. Right, so your value is tarnished and diminished when you leave.
You can write a book.
Well, you can remove tarnish. It's toxic. Yeah. I don't think it's tarnish when you get close to this particular president. I think it's toxicity. I think you burn and you wither.
Right.
And I agree with everyone here, and I understand your statement about being complicit. I get that. But if there is – there may just be something in this guy who thinks, Kelly, that, maybe I can help the train wreck – And try to keep it going off the rails.
And I think he did at first. I think there was that sense of, I can control it. I'm going to take your phone away. I'm going to control who comes in to see you. You are going to keep, the Manafort's of the world away. And in time, he's a smart guy. He realizes, no. And he has pretty much said so in these interviews in which he does, that it's, what did I do in my life to have deserved this position and stuff. So he gets it. He knows where he's in right now. And he just either can't seem to escape it, a loyalty to country, or maybe he thinks, again, that he can still turn this around.
His filters certainly seem to be coming off as you continue to witness and hear.
Yeah, maybe suicide.
Expressing his frustration.
Maybe political suicide.
Political suicide, yeah.
Okay, so here Nancy says, what's Trump doing? Dear panel, according to some, Donald Trump is carrying out his goal of weakening the Western alliance with our traditional allies, as Vladimir Putin would wish. That's from Nancy. And from Keith, Putin had the best week ever. Last week, Putin had his best week ever. Putin must have turned up the pressure on his asset in the White House. I can't explain Trump's actions any other way. It's dumbfounding. The tweets, the attacks on our allies, and the tariffs make no sense, and that's from Keith.
Well, I don't know. I think he owes Russian oligarchs a tremendous amount of money.
Could be.
I think that's what this is all about, be quite honest with you. They own him.
Well, they may own, but they may own him, Libby, for other reasons. One of the other reasons is he's in over his head in this thing, and he's got Mueller on his tail. And they know, and they have all of the stuff that could ruin him.
Right. And not just him, but his family.
Yeah.
It extends out to the family, to his sons, to everyone within the family who has had some financial dealings with Russia.
I just want to know how that audit is going with his taxes.
It's really a perpetual audit.
It has to just be, that's got to be what's taking up a lot of our resources.
And Joe, what does Mitch McConnell say after all this? I think his remarks either last night or this morning was, this has been great for conservatives in America and, including the second Reagan administration. Nothing could be better for conservatives. So this is the reaction.
You've got to say something. Mm-hmm.
You got to say something. Well, you have to say something to the funders. I don't think what he was saying was anything to people like you or I. I think they, Mitch McConnell being
to the
savvy, being the savvy political genius that he is, I mean, he understands they have to raise a ton of money, and that's who he's having that conversation with right now.
And David, he's trying to turn a negative into a positive. They do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They say that somebody said something, and instead of being, oh my God, they shouldn't have said that, they said, this is a good thing that he did.
And this is what he really said.
Let's say George wrote in, what if, and puzzle this for me and let me know what you all think. Could Trump's attack on Trudeau and his reneging on signing the G7 statement after leaving Canada be a message to Kim? Could he be saying that, quote, even if we get a huge denuking agreement and even if you and I get along at a 10 level, you make one little mistake or make me mad in any way, we're back to fire and fury. Look at what I'm willing to do to my best allies and friends. And he says that to the guy who killed his brother and his uncle.
Yeah,
that's what I said. Is he, in Trump's world, he views this as a way of showing his strength.
Well, he is a graduate from the Acme School of Negotiation,
My way or the highway.
Yeah, but I've seen Bugs Bunny do the same thing. Oh, yeah. It's the most profoundly ridiculous thing to do prior to going into a guy who goes around killing his own family members. It's like, you're tough because you insult this guy with funny socks up north?
Yeah.
Look at what I did to my own uncle and brother. Yeah.
Marilyn says, subject Canada, on a hopeful note, maybe Trump will tick off Canada so much they'll invade and capture him, and we'll get President Trudeau as our president.
That would be all right.
And Michael says, Canadian allies, this is not the art of the deal, but the art of the lie. I'm so embarrassed by this man's treatment of Canada, who has always been our decent neighbor and has been there for us in so many trials as in protecting the hostages in Iran. And that's from Michael.
That's a good reminder.
Our friends to the north. The only time I've ever been upset with our friends to the north is at the Easy Pass booth where they stop. Our friends from Quebec, they will stop at the Easy Pass when they should just be going. And whenever there's
that's because they're too polite. They just
don't want to go.
They don't want to go.
And then the Molson bottles that I find in my, when I'm going to trade in my cans for my 5 cents.
I think these things could probably work out through a little negotiation.
Yeah. Those things.
Well, we could have, but now that's gone.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately.
The goodwill is gone.
It's over.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. So we've been talking, obviously, about what happened on Friday and Saturday at the G7, or as I've also heard it called, the G6 versus G1.
Or
but just
G.
Just G.
G-whiz.
G-whiz.
But as I said, later today, our time, tomorrow, North Korea time, both President Trump and the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, will meet. There was a rather fascinating little piece that I just heard as I was walking in this morning, or walking into the studio on NPR, of saying that the meeting was expected to be very brief because things were moving along so well. I don't really know what that means because they haven't actually met yet, so I don't know how they're moving along.
It's
but
that
apparently,
good.
It's, right. So, it's good. So good. They're already, I guess, the
Agreement is already written. They just have to sign.
Kim Jong-un has said that he's leaving in the early afternoon, so they'll meet in the morning.
53 minutes, they said, after the meeting begins, he's going to be back on a plane.
Well, if he leaves early, then he doesn't have to pay for the hotel room. You know, you have that 24-hour
right.
deal. And at $8,000 a night, you really want to see if you can cut corners. I can't even imagine what the honor wine, you know, when you pay for those little, like the Snicker bars.
Yeah.
If the room is $8,000, that thing's going to be, what, $250,000?
Are we paying for this, by the way?
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
Right. We don't know. Some say China's paying. Some say we're paying. What we do know is that North Korea cannot pay.
I think it's going to be a Russian credit card.
Yeah, you think so? Okay, fine. Yeah, I think probably.
My favorite quote in this was President Trump saying, talking about sizing up a meeting with Kim, and he says, "My touch, my feel, that's what I'll do." And I was trying to think, was he talking about meeting Kim, or is that how he talks about when he goes to those beauty pageants?
Yeah.
You know, my touch, my feel, that's what I'll do. That's the problem is that's all Donald Trump knows is my touch, my feel, that's what. I mean, that
my
was
intuition.
On the, wasn't that on the extra tape?
You know, we are a culture famous for quoting presidents.
Ask not what your country.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, the good stuff.
I'm just so fearful of the kind of quotes that will be.
Tear down this wall.
in 30 years,
here.
You know.
The buck stops here.
What will
yes.
the kids be saying? Jeez.
You know, in our hour. No, so we get my touch, my feel. That's Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's all about his intuition and his ability to size up a room. And know who's who and know what
within
he can
a minute.
Get. Right, within a minute.
But to Alan's point as to the numbers going up and to working with, if this is indeed just working with the base, what do you have to come out of this meeting accomplishing? And even politically for the midterms coming into November, what ultimately would you have had to come out of this meeting with, or is it just the fact, or have you already accomplished it just by going to the meeting?
Okay, so there's one thing we do know about Trump, and that is he's a master propagandist. As we all know, you say it enough times, you know, it's real. The Democrats and the opposition are pathetic in terms of saying, well, no, that's absolutely wrong, and here's why, and saying it over and over and over again, which they are not doing. So he wins, Joe. Your point is well taken. He wins. If nothing happens, he says, well, at least I started the dialogue. But I am much more fearful that Kim will say yes to a joint proposal that we have to, quote, work on in the future, and he'll claim a victory.
I agree with that. He'll claim the, because what he's looking for is a midterm boost. I think everything that he's doing, you know, whether it's attacking Russia, whether it's trade, tariffs, you know, North Korea, it's all about the midterm boost. Let's think about this, right? Most presidents in this position, what they're thinking about is whether or not they'll be able to achieve their agenda, you know, in the second half of their term. And so they're concerned about the midterms for that reason only. That's not what this president has to be concerned about. He has to be concerned about his own liberty, okay?
Will he be impeached before the second term?
Exactly. And so, even the second half of his first term.
Right.
That's what he's got to be concerned about. So, of course, you throw caution to the wind. You can engage in the kind of, you know, geopolitics that he's engaging in right now, so long as it's improving his standing with his base that he needs.
He did that with Israel. We're going to move. Mm-hmm. We're going to move to Jerusalem. It doesn't matter long term. He's a day trader. If the base likes us today, we're good.
So the position that he put himself in, because of, again, he seems to be. It's like Dick Dastardly, you know. He's just, you know, he's a villain, but he's not really a good villain.
I can't pay the rent.
Because it's really transactional, right? It's so transactional. So, you know, anyone advising him would have said, listen, before you blow up the Iran deal, right, why don't we see what we can get from, you know, this North Korea? Because you can't settle for anything that even resembles the Iran deal without being mocked, right? So you know he can't settle for, well, it's not total denuclearization, but we have monitoring. He can't settle for anything that remotely looks like the Iran deal. So he's just really destroyed.
Which I want to say very quickly, you want to bet, David.
Right. Or he'll do exactly the same thing and say, well, this is a new deal.
Right. This is right. So different.
This is so it's so better.
This is so much better.
Right. Right.
It's huge.
So let's say he goes in and he sizes him up in the first minute, as he said he could and will do, and it goes horribly awry, and it they leave and nothing, and then he starts. I'm just saying. Let's
Rocket
say
Man.
He starts
we'll
calling
back.
Him Rocket.
We'll
Rocket
be back.
Man.
We'll be back to Rocket Man.
He starts.
Long Man. That's right.
He starts talking about the size of the button again, yeah. and all of
he
that.
Tried. He tried.
And it's still a win,
it's
right?
This is a win. He's there. He's meeting him. No president has done this. This is a win in his mind, and I think for his supporters, because they can all say he said he was going to do this, and he did it.
Does anybody at this table think that Kim would have used a nuclear weapon on the United States?
No.
Couldn't have
no.
happened.
No.
No.
Listen, I have a hard time accepting the threat as real from a guy that had no plane to get to Singapore and has no money to pay for a hotel. Now, granted, he may have spent all of their resources on developing, you know, nuclear weaponry, but I can't see it.
David, short of one thing, if this guy was such a madman and so angry that he wanted to commit suicide, he would send a missile, missile, to California. But I don't see that.
Now, and I think he also wants to stay in power. You know, he knows he has, Kim has his own kind of base.
He has generals too, you know.
Yeah, and so he needs to show that, you know, I'm bringing back some money. I'm going to bring back some resources.
But who's going to undo him? That's the thing. His family's been in power forever.
Right. But
he's going to stay in power.
Right, but I think there is that fear. Right. If you're a dictator, you know, not being a dictator, my family would question that. But yeah, I don't know. But I would think if you're a dictator, I mean, he's worried about the food he's going to be eating there.
No, he's worried about the generals. Because this is the way they've done business for a long time. And those guys are sitting up there and saying, there goes the franchise. You know, if we make a deal about denuclearization and military reductions and all the rest of it, that's where he's got to worry. He's got to worry about one of those guys with a gun. Just like Hitler did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. We'll go back to Rocket Man, but he will. He'll say, I mean, I remember when he blasted Obama for even mentioning the idea of meeting with Un.
I thought you were saying, oh, I remember when he blasted Obama like Saturday.
Yeah, well, there was that too. But, you know, and now he's doing.
Because it was all Obama's fault that they got, Russia got kicked out of the.
Yeah.
Nothing means nothing.
Well, that's true.
Well, and unfortunately, you're talking about a base of people, I don't think, that have an appreciation at all for history, and revisionist history can be done, you know, by Twitter, one tweet at a time.
But David, I'm sorry, it extends much further than the base. I mean, when he goes up to 44% in the polls, he's convincing some of the neutrals. Yeah. He's convincing some of the people in between. And it's easy to see why.
Well, I think we'd have to give the polling a little bit of time, too. I think that he received a great number in terms of unemployment. The job numbers from a few weeks ago were very good. And so it's interesting. It would be interesting to see when that polling was done, what kind of events and news shaped the information that they were able to poll on to get that kind of number. But I just see the trade tariffs, once if and when they're imposed, and they're being strategically imposed, you know, along the Rust Belt, some of the center states, center red, I think that's going to impact his numbers.
I'm curious how long-lasting all this is. I mean, as much as President Trump has tried to devalue and take away everything that Obama had done, there is going to be another president.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought is that another president will
win
eventually.
In 2020.
And that president will want to go back to some level of civility. So my question is, do these G7, G6 countries kind of bide their time, knowing it's not America, but it's Trump?
They bided or bid their time, whatever, however you say it, when Bush was president, and were so thankful when Obama came in because they were dealing with somebody who understood. But Bush, did the same thing.
And it just doesn't seem so bad now. George Bush. But
after
it's amazing what changes.
Yeah,
with
but
time.
After we invaded Iraq, everybody thought we were crazy.
Right.
And it wasn't until when Obama came back, our stature in the world.
So the
was
solace
restored.
We could take is that at some point these countries will say,
the clock on the wall says it's time for Rugula. Okay. Clock on the wall says it's time for Ray Graff and News. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Same difference.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. It is 7 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, David Soares, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post on the panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has some letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Okay. Debbie says, it's not that previous presidents couldn't sit down with North Korea. It's that they wouldn't. I find this all so depressing, Debbie, in North Adams. Thomas says, glad to hear a local representative from my area in Middletown, New York. While he is there, can we discuss the CPV power plant and what kind of benefit it will have for the local area? I can see the large stacks from the plant from my house, and I feel the environmental impact it will have on my breathing, as I am an asthmatic. Thank you for your great work.
I think Scott Pruitt is saying that it's all a figment of your imagination.
Yeah. It's nice that we're taking requests, though.
Breathe deep.
It's an issue that's going to take another roundtable discussion. But we've got the CPV power plant, and obviously the folks in the Hudson Valley area have another concern because that seems to have been built with the some dealings that Prococo Cuomo's. Brother by another mother.
I love
had agreed
that.
To. And so that's what I think irking folks is, besides the fact that there's a power plant that people aren't really clear about what is spewing out of there right now. It's not gas, but that this was done with Cuomo and Prococo's dealings with CPV officials who have been found guilty, as was Prococo.
Wow.
That's what irks folks.
Mother with another brother with another mother.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Art of the deal, says Russ. Different goals. Trump wants denuclearization. Kim Jong-un wants China and Russia to withdraw from the sanctions regime. The advantage is clearly with the North Koreans. Kim has only to show a willingness to denuclearize to break the sanctions regime. We'll see, right? If Trump wants a victory enough, the art of the deal, he'll give it to him.
Did you get your coin? Did everybody get their coin?
Yeah, the coin is. Yeah.
Bluster, says Joseph. Good morning, panel. As we are aware, Mr. Trump is a phony and a bully and a truly lousy businessman. At this point, he and his family and friends are making more money than he's ever had in his life, and he knows a money train when he sees it. He's playing to his base only for his own sake to get reelected, and continue this unprecedented money flow to Trump coffers.
There's so much truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris says, panel, there may no longer be term limits by 2020.
Well, that did cross my mind when
when he said he'd like to be president for life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he goes into these meetings with somebody like Un, who is president for life, unless the generals take him out.
And then
Putin is, you know, the guy in China is president for life. And he thinks he's the king.
And if he can say that he has to deal with tariffs against Canada because of national security, what would stop him from saying, you know, I need to be president because of national security? I shouldn't be stepping down at this point.
And Kelly,
a la Roosevelt.
And excuse me. And Alex says, Mr. Kelly has a private agenda that is anti-immigrant based. It's the one policy subject he speaks out about with passion. That's why he's there and staying to preserve country for old. And it says, and I don't know if this is a brilliant thing or not, for old Wotemen, W-H-O-T-E, is probably a typo, but it's possible there's something philosophically brilliant about it. Old Wotemen. Okay.
Walt Wotemen.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Mike, Captain.
And James says, Trump and Kim. Trump claims some kind of X-ray vision that will allow him to just look at the North Korean counterpart and know if he can be trusted. Is the same vision he used in it is, I suppose it's supposed to say, the same vision he used in selecting his cabinet and inner circle from which he's had to fire dozens? That's an interesting point.
When you said Trump and Kim, I thought you meant the Kardashians, but I listened for the rest of it.
She did come to the White House.
And so, she got that woman.
So really, all the Democrats need is kryptonite.
Yeah. Mm. And we need lead.
And Paul says, Trump laundering money. We forget Trump's hotel in Panama was speculated, he says, to be laundering money, and recently was in battle with authorities there. Trump's security team kept the authorities locked out while they shredded all kinds of documents. Paul from New Paltz. What I got? Well,
apparently he has a team that shreds, and from what I'm reading, another team that tapes them back together.
And a team that rips, because he was criticized the other day for ripping up documents which should be part of the historical record.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the very sexy topic of net neutrality. Goodbye, net neutrality. Today's the day. Everything changes. Two pivotal developments this week could dramatically expand the power and footprint of major telecom companies, altering how Americans access everything from political news to Game of Thrones on the internet. Today marks the official end of the U.S. government's net neutrality rules, which had required broadband providers such as AT&T, Charter, Comcast, and Verizon to treat all web traffic equally. The repeal is part of a campaign by the Republican chairman of the Federal Communications Commission to deregulate the telecom industry and a bid to boost its investments, particularly in rural areas. One day after the net neutrality changes, a federal judge is set to rule on Tuesday on whether AT&T can buy Time Warner. AT&T, already the country's second largest wireless network, stands to gain a content trove from Time Warner that includes HBO and CNN, leading the Justice Department, which filed the lawsuit, to argue that the company could harm its rivals. The two events in Washington could lead to further consolidation of wireless, cable, and content giants, public interest advocates say. And they fear that behemoths like AT&T might someday prioritize their own TV shows and other content over rivals. Internet service providers, or ISPs, deny that they would engage in such a practice, think that they would do that. Yet consumer watchdogs worry that consumers would have little legal recourse, if they did indeed do that. That from the Washington Post, David Soares.
It is that's the most troubling news that I saw today. And you know, you want to talk about increasing term limits. You can only do that when you begin to dismantle, you know, the democratic institutions. And you know, for people who are reading this and believing that this is just about, oh, it's just the internet, the vast majority of the people, as we saw during the last campaign, are getting their news and information from places like Facebook. And when I think we all know what's happened with Facebook and the how easy it was for a foreign power to influence, you know, Americans as a result of tampering, you know, with Facebook. And I think that what we have right now is yet another opportunity for conglomerates to just consume another major institution of democracy and begin to establish footprints that will then make determinations about content that you get, how fast the content that you get. They're going to monetize and then, again, make it available for someone to weaponize, that being a foreign power. And so this is something that I think every American should be taking stock of and beginning to make those calls to your representatives if you believe that there's still something that can be done, you know, in Congress to ensure that the internet and the free flow of information we get, you know, from either on our phones or our computers is still there tomorrow.
Let's not forget the great Judge Harold Green, who broke up Ma Bell 30 years ago. His decision that, you know, the old system was broken apart and all the baby bells went out and did their thing, and now they're all coming back together again. And so we have a federal decision that broke up this monopoly, and that's just been by the wayside. People aren't looking back at, you know, what has happened in the past.
I want to go back to David Soares for a minute on this. So now you get a federal judge, any federal judge, just name them. The president has opined. We know that the president doesn't like CNN very much. So one would think if the judge was taking hints, as we say, from the Trump administration, maybe wanted to go to the Supreme Court someday or something like that, does he follow that and say, okay, this would be highly illegal, you know, to do it? Or the other way around is the, you know, Trump philosophy of rewarding the rich and screwing the poor take precedence over all of this?
Well, you raise an excellent point, right? Because ultimately these decisions are going to be made by people who are being appointed to lifetime appointments, right? And we've never seen the impaneling or the appointments at levels like this before. All of the several years during the Obama administration where the Senate didn't do anything with judges, and now there seem to be judges being appointed left and right. And these decisions are ultimately going to be made by people that he influences. So when you talk about, you know, democracy, and you talk about, you know, democracy isn't going to die in the dark. It's going to die in the light. And I hate to sound so dramatic, but you can start to see the withering away and the attacks at every level on the most, you know, treasured democratic institutions, including. And I know another story that we hope to get to today, the investigation of a reporter and the seizing of all of that reporter's documents.
And that's going to be the legacy of, I mean, the net neutrality and the judges is the legacy of Trump. Whether it's midterms change, whether it's, you know, he doesn't get a second term. As you say, these are going to be appointments for the next 20, 30 years. And these decisions will have been based on the folks that he is appointing into office with, and again, lifetime appointments. Yeah. Conservative judges who will then change the course of democracy.
I hate to use this term, but I mean, if you just reflect last week, you know, on the eve of our Pride celebration, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court, you know, has basically made its decision that allows for people who have a certain bent to have their cake and eat it too.
To discriminate.
Right. And no protection. Religious, right. Based on their religious
No protection
views.
To transgenders. Right. We see certainly there's been changes over a tide looking to turn in the federal government.
Let me just say, there's always you know, precedent for misbehavior by presidents. When Bill Clinton, for example, pardoned, was it Rich, Mark Rich?
Yeah. Yes.
And that class of people that he pardoned with him, the stench around that was pretty bad. I'm not saying two wrongs make a right. It doesn't. But, you know, every time you weaken democracy by doing something like this, there's a legacy and there's a cost.
Yeah, you're creating a norm.
I do want to get to the other story that David mentioned just a few minutes ago in regards to the press groups criticizing the seizing of a Times reporter's records.
The revelation the federal prosecutor seized years' worth of email and phone records from New York Times reporter drew criticism on Friday from news organizations and press rights groups, which expressed outrage at the first known instance of the Trump administration's pursuing the private communications of a journalist. The Committee to Protect Journalists called the move a fundamental threat to press freedom. The Times, in its own statement, called the seizure an outrageous overreach and raised concerns about a chilling effect on journalists' ability to report on the government. The records were seized from Allie Watkins, a reporter for The Times in Washington, amid a Justice Department investigation into a former high-ranking aide of the Senate Intelligence Committee who was suspected of leaking classified information to reporters.
What kind of relationship between those two? Was there a romantic relationship?
Yes. Yes. Which they both admitted to.
Which, by the way, is one of the things that the conservative community is raising again and again and again on the internet and every other way, which is that she violated her obligation as a reporter. Let me put you right on the scene here. What if one of your reporters did that?
She told her editors after she was hired that she had a relationship with this person. If I was an editor and I found out that one of my reporters, the first thing I would do is certainly take the reporter off that beat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could not have a reporter have a beat in which there was a relationship so that there was even the possibility of a perception of a conflict.
So do you think the Times erred in letting her go forward with this information?
I think they do. And then I think the Times then was caught with their pants down because they did not realize she never then told the Times that she had been she had gotten a letter from the Justice Department. The Times found out, mm-hmm. not by her. And I'm still trying to, and now the Times is certainly backing her, but I'm sure privately they're outraged that they had to find out not through the reporter, but through this
media.
I
just see such a horrible pattern here, right?
Sure.
So, you know, whenever it's someone outside of the Trump sphere that seems to violate a norm or have a conflict, right? The rest of the world comes crashing down upon that person's calling everything that they do into question. Meanwhile, right, you have a president, right, who just received a significant investment from a foreign government into one of his properties. And in exchange for that, he ratifies, mm-hmm. a deal that allows for a telecommunication company that the intelligence all the people in intelligentsia say is a threat not only to our interests in this country, not only our capitalist interest, but our security interest.
David, you're right. Of course you're right. And there's no question that there is a war going on against the press from Donald Trump. On the other hand, I have to say,
wrong is wrong.
We have to be very
wrong. Wrong is absolutely wrong.
We have to be careful.
Right.
Wrong is absolutely.
And unfortunately, the press has. There is a point in time right now that, yes, things look a lot worse. And I think, if anything, what we've seen is maybe the networks and newspapers have taken a more conservative approach to how they handle when their employees have done some misdeeds.
Absolutely. We have an issue here, and I'm not I don't mean to gloss over, you know, the reporter's ethical obligation here in having to have provided their employers, you know, that information. But I mean, we're a few weeks removed from Sean Hannity's disclosure, a legal proceeding that disclosed Sean Hannity's ties with Mr. Cohen and Mr. Trump. And yet, it's like,
Well, we saw that with Samantha Bee. We saw that with Kathy Griffith. We see it where we have folks who have a more liberal slant getting slammed. They go, well, wait a minute. Yeah, maybe I did wrong. But, boy, isn't that a lot worse?
Well, David's point is extremely well taken.
Yeah. And also, by the way, this is also a bipartisan issue because President Obama really pushed down on the Justice Department going after
leakers
and the media. And, you know, we've seen Governor Cuomo, not Mr. Open Government himself.
Mm-hmm.
So this is certainly a great bipartisan attack on the press.
We are out of time. My thanks to our entire group this morning, Alan and David Swords, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. My thanks to you all. Have a great day.
good to have, starting with all of you. We'll be back right after the short break.